going to be giving away the plots of tombs. If you haven't seen them yet, I'm about to ruin them for you. Sorry. One is an older movie, so I figure if you're really interested in seeing it, you probably would have done so by now. The other is a newer movie, so if you had planned on watching it, just plug your ears. I'll cue you when you can start listening again. In the past 6 months, I have watched several movies with themes on death, dying, and the afterlife. I would often view them with my headphones on, watching them on my laptop while my husband sat just across the room working on his computer. He had no interest in depressing movies, so I watched them alone. There were many parts of the movies where I was bawling my eyes out, and he wasn't watching with me. It seemed fitting that he was watching YouTube pop music parodies. So he didn't know what was making me cry, and he felt a little helpless, because he didn't like seeing me sad. But the subject matter warranted it. I chose these movies because their themes mimic my own personal beliefs about what happens in the afterlife. In fact, when I saw these movies, I thought it strange that the imaginations of others who write these movie scripts would have reached into my mind and stole my ideas. At the same time, I found comfort in the fact that I was not alone in my theories about where you go when you die. I had originally contemplated 5 movies to talk to you about today, but decided that these 2 movies most closely resembled my own beliefs and wanted to take more time to focus on them. The first movie I want to talk to you about is The 5 People You Meet in Heaven, a made-for-TV film adaptation of the novel by the same name, starring John Voight, was released in 2004 and is available on DVD. The film was added to Netflix's United States Library in October of 2015. Eddie Maintenance, that's what the kids called him, because that's what his name tag said. He was Eddie, maintenance supervisor at Ruby Pier Amusement Park, a job he'd inherited from his father. A cruel, cold man that he came to despise almost as much as he did Ruby Pier. It is Eddie's 83rd birthday. It is also to be Eddie's last day on Earth. A park ride has broken down, and Eddie realizes as the other maintenance crew members are unloading the passengers that if they start the ride again, the cable will break and the ride will come crashing to the ground. Then he sees the little girl, the one he'd made the balloon animal for earlier that morning, sitting at the place where the ride will land if it is restarted. He runs towards the girl, intending to push her out of the way, just as the ride car is being released. He reaches the girl, he feels a child's hand in his, a flash of light, and then nothing. When Eddie awakens, he finds himself uninjured and realizes he feels young and more energetic. He is met by a man with blue skin who suffers from silver nitrate poisoning named Joseph, who had been a sideshow performer at Ruby Pier when Eddie was a child. Eddie discovers that the man had died when young Eddie threw a baseball into the street, causing the blue man to swerve, hit a pole, and die of a heart attack. Joseph explains to Eddie that he is the first of 5 people Eddie would meet in the 5 different levels of heaven. People who had had a great effect on Eddie's life, and whom Eddie had had a great effect on theirs. Eddie would find that there is a lesson to be learned by each of these people. Eddie also discovers the reason for his sudden energy, youth, and stamina, is that in the 5 stages of heaven, you feel exactly the same way you did when you knew the person you were meeting. The lesson the blue man has for Eddie is that everything happens for a reason. There are no random events in life. All lives and experiences are interconnected in some way, and even the little things you do can affect other people's lives and experiences dramatically. Then Joseph goes on his way, revealing to Eddie the heaven which he had chosen, a place where he felt most loved and accepted, and that was the sideshow at Ruby Pier. Joseph's skin turns from blue to a normal light tan. Eddie then finds himself in a war-torn Philippine forest where he is met by the captain, Eddie's commanding officer from the army. The captain and Eddie reminisce about the time that they were in a POW work camp and how they had escaped, They recall how they set the camp on fire as a way of releasing their anger from the months of hell there. In one of the huts that Eddie had set on fire, he saw a shadow and tried to enter to find out what it was. He was then shot in the leg, which prevented him from entering. He never knew who fired the shot, and always blamed his leg wound for the reason he was never able to make a life outside of Ruby Pier, which he had grown to loathe in his old age. So he was shocked and angry when the captain admitted that he had shot Eddie in the leg to save his life. The captain later died by stepping on a landmine while checking to ensure that the path was clear for his men who were treating Eddie's leg wound in the back of the truck. The captain's lesson for Eddie is that sacrifices are part of life. Everyone makes these sacrifices. Some sacrifices are big, and others are day-to-day small sacrifices, but they all make an impact on other people's lives. After this revelation, Captain shows Eddie the true nature of his heaven, which is not, in fact, the battlefield that Eddie remembers. The war-torn environment makes way to the most serene and beautiful nature landscape that Eddie has ever seen. He looks at the captain to see a man he hardly recognizes without a layer of ash and dirt on his face. A young man in a Hawaiian shirt who explains that for his heaven, he wished to see the world like it was before war, fighting, conflict, and cruelty. Eddie then finds himself in a snowbank outside a railroad car cafe. He realizes that he doesn't feel as full of stamina as he did before and that his limp is back. Inside the cafe, he sees his father. Eddie tries to get his attention, but his father doesn't see him. He is then met by a well-dressed woman named Ruby. She explains that Ruby Pier was named after her by her late cousin, Emil, who had built the pier in tribute to her. Emil died trying to put out a fire that destroyed a great deal of the pier. She despised Ruby Pier for taking so much away from her. She explained to Eddie that the diner was her heaven, because this is where she was working as a waitress when she met Emil. She explains that the diner was a safe haven for all people who had been hurt by Ruby Pier, including Eddie's father. She tells Eddie that his father, whom Eddie had thought had died from the effects of alcoholism, actually died from pneumonia after jumping into the cold water at the pier to save a friend. Ruby's lesson to Eddie was the importance of releasing anger and granting forgiveness. There is always more than one side to a story. She teaches Eddie to forgive his father for all the trouble and hurt he had caused. Eddie then finds himself in a garden watching a wedding. Then he sees his late wife, Marguerite. They move from one wedding to another, catching up on the things that they had not been able to share since Marguerite's death. She died at the age of 47 from a brain tumor. She explains that her version of heaven was weddings, and they recall their own wedding, which was in a rented Chinese restaurant with an accordion player. They laugh about that. She says she chose weddings for her heaven because of the way a bride and groom look at each other when they are exchanging their vows. She was the love of Eddie's life. Eddie tells her he is sorry for not being able to provide her a life outside of Ruby Pier, a life she so richly deserved. But she tells him that she loved life at the pier, and that she couldn't have asked for a better life than to just be with Eddie, and that her only regret was that they weren't able to have any children. He replies that all he would have changed was to have had even more time together with her. Marguerite's lesson for Eddie is the power of love, even after death. There are multiple forms of love, some stronger than others. Lost love is the strongest kind of love, the kind that can be felt even across enormous distances. Eddie then wakes up on the edge of the Philippine River, where he meets a young Filipino girl named Tala. She appears to be about 8 years old. There are other girls in the water washing each other. She doesn't speak English, but manages to explain to Eddie that she was the shadow Eddie saw inside the hut he'd set on fire, the one Eddie was going to go in when the captain shot him in the leg. She shows Eddie that she died from her burns. He looks at her again and sees that her skin is charred and burnt. She hands Eddie a stone and tells him to wash her the way the other girls were washing each other. Eddie begins rubbing her skin with the stone, and the burns he had inflicted on her begin to wash away, exposing her beautiful skin beneath. Eddie, who has asked every one of the people he has met in heaven so far, if he had managed to save the little girl under the rug, it would be pure, tells Tala that he felt a child's hand in his and thought he had pulled the girl to safety. Tala tells him that he had indeed saved the girl, but he pushed her out of the way, and that the hand he felt was actually Tala's, that she had pulled him up to heaven to keep him safe. Tala teaches Eddie that his life was not for nothing, and its purpose was to protect all the many children at Ruby Pier through his care for the safety of the rides. Tala's lesson for Eddie is that there's always a purpose for your life. You live for a reason the same way people die for a reason. Where you are today is a combination of your past actions, decisions, and the way the people around you have affected you. Eddie finally discovers his own heaven. It's actually Ruby Pier, the place he hated in life. Why? Because that's where he met his true love, Marguerite, where he was most loved and admired by so many. He is surrounded by all the people who were alive because Eddie kept the ride safe, and consequently their children and their children's children. And when the little girl whose life he had saved at the pier dies many years later, Eddie will be the first person she meets when she sees her five people in heaven. For those of you who were plugging your ears, you may now uncover them. I am done talking about that movie. The second movie I want to talk about is called What Dreams May Come, a 1998 American fantasy drama film starring Robin Williams and Cuba Gooding Jr. The film is based on the 1978 novel of the same name by Richard Matheson. The title is from a line in Hamlet's To Be or Not to Be soliloquy. While vacationing in Switzerland, pediatrician Chris Nielsen meets artist Anne Collins. After a very short courtship, they marry and have two children, Ian and Marie. It is clear that they have an idyllic life, which ends when the children die in a car crash when Ian is 16 and Marie is 12. Annie suffers a breakdown and is admitted to a mental institution. The two contemplate divorce, with Chris telling Annie it is like D-Day, D standing for divorce. Annie points out that it also stands for decision, so they call it Double D-Day. But Chris realizes the reason Annie has withdrawn from him is because she can't understand why he didn't have a breakdown too, and tells her, I'm part of the problem, because I remind you, because I couldn't join you, I left you alone, I'm sorry. This brings Annie out of her depression and the two stay together. Their marriage is stronger than ever. Annie relies on Chris for the times when she feels like she's going to have a meltdown, and Chris uses her art to help her stay sane and to show her his love for her. On the fourth anniversary of D-Day, Chris is killed in another car crash. Chris spends a time on Earth knowing he is dead, but unable to understand why he has not gone to heaven. He vows to stay with Annie, who falls into a deep despair. Chris eventually realizes that her despair is caused by her inability to heal, which is actually caused by Chris's refusing to leave her. So Chris ascends to heaven and wakes up in one of Annie's paintings, the one she had painted of their dream world, where they had planned to retire in their old age. He learns that his immediate surroundings can be controlled by his imagination. He meets a man he recognizes as Albert, his friend and mentor from his medical residency. Albert will guide him and help him in this new afterlife. Albert teaches Chris about his existence in heaven and how to shape his little corner and how to travel to others' heavens. Suddenly, a beautiful tree appears in the middle of the painting Chris and Albert are standing in. And the tree, it is a tree that Annie is painting in her attempt to talk to Chris. Albert says the ability for people to communicate with each other after death means that they were soulmates. But then Annie decides Chris can't really hear her, so she destroys the tree, and it is destroyed in Chris's heaven also. Chris lives in the house in Annie's painting, And he is miserable at the thought that he would have to spend an eternity there without Annie. One day he meets Leona, an Asian woman he doesn't recognize with a flight attendant name tag. She takes him to her part of heaven, a city where people with common visions of heaven go. Some people in the city are going to help others be born on earth, and Chris realizes that reincarnation does exist. The city is a beautiful diorama that Chris comes to recognize as the one that sat next to his daughter Marie's bed. He remembers Marie once looking at the diorama and asking, "Is this where we go when we die?" They take a boat ride. Leona explains that people in heaven can essentially take on whatever form they want. And Leona chose her form because her daddy once met an Asian flight attendant named Leona and told Marie that Asian women were lovely, graceful, and intelligent. And she decided that when she grew up, she wanted to be just like that. And that was why she chose the form that she did. For a split second, Leona transforms into Marie. The two share a tearful reunion. Meanwhile, Annie is unable to cope with the loss of her husband and commits suicide. Albert breaks the news to Chris, who is initially relieved that her suffering is done, and wants to know when he can see her. He grows angry when he learns that those who commit suicide go to hell. This is not the result of a judgment made against them, but rather their own tendency to create nightmare afterlife worlds based on their pain. Chris is adamant that he will rescue Annie from hell, despite Albert's insistence that no one has ever succeeded in doing so with a suicide. But Chris reminds Albert that he and Annie are soulmates. Albert agrees to find Chris a tracker to help search for Annie's soul. On the journey to hell, Chris recalls Ian, his son, remembering how he'd once called him the one man he'd wanted his side to brave hell. Chris realizes that Albert is actually Ian. Ian explains that he chose Albert's appearance because he knew that Chris would listen to Albert without reservation. Ian intends to go with Chris to hell to rescue his mother, but the tracker says he needs Chris's mind to be clear to just concentrate on finding Annie. So Ian is left behind. Before they part, Ian begs Chris to remember how he'd saved his marriage following Ian and Marie's death. Chris then journeys onward with the tracker. Chris must walk across a sea of faces of the damned, stepping on them as he navigates across it. The damned can be heard talking, including a businesswoman who says she never overbilled her clients. Chris recalls a time when Annie wanted him to learn to dance. She said it was because she felt like she was alone in a sea of faces. That's when he sees her face in the sea. As he runs to be with her, he and the tracker fall into a deep abyss where they arrive at a dark, twisted version of Chris and Annie's house. The tracker then reveals himself as the real Albert and warns Chris that if he stays with Annie for more than a few minutes, he may be permanently trapped in hell, advising that all Chris can reasonably expect is an opportunity for a final farewell to Annie. He also explains to Chris that the reason people choose their own bodies in heaven is because their real bodies get in the way of who they really are. This way nobody has to worry about who's the father or the mentor. They just are who they are. Chris enters the now horrific-looking home and finds Annie suffering from amnesia, unable to remember her suicide and visibly tortured by her decrepit surroundings. Unable to stir her memory, Chris gives up his quest to save Annie from hell. But instead of returning to heaven, Chris chooses to join Annie forever in hell. He tells Albert to tell his children he loves them and he won't leave their mother. As he declares to Annie his intent to stay, he repeats what he had said to her in the institution following the children's death. "I'm part of the problem because I remind you. Because I couldn't join you, I left you alone, and vows to never leave her alone again." This causes her to regain her memories while Chris is making her nightmare his. Annie, wanting nothing more than to save Chris, ascends to heaven, bringing Chris with her. Chris and Annie are reunited with their children in heaven, and all appearances are restored. The family has a long, satisfying existence in heaven, and one day Chris proposes reincarnation, so he and Annie can experience life together again. The film ends with Chris and Annie meeting again as young children in a situation that parallels their first meeting. These films follow a common theme of my belief system. While I don't personally know if there are five levels of heaven, and can't be sure that there are even any levels of heaven, the point both movies push home were that when you die, you can choose what you want your heaven to be. Wherever you believe heaven to be, that is what it will be. You will have your own special reasons for making this heaven your own, but the whole idea is to go somewhere after you die where you will be eternally happy. And isn't that what the mainstream idea of heaven is about? Except that unlike that, I believe that we don't all go to the same heaven. We may choose to join loved ones in their heaven, but we don't have to stay there. Or we can create heavens based on people or places we loved when we were alive. We can be guides for those who follow. We may also end up in hell, because many religions indoctrinate people to believe that if you don't do certain things, or if they practice a religion that states that only certain people are saved by grace, and that there is no chance for them to go to heaven, then they ultimately end up where they believe they will go, which is hell. And I do believe in soulmates. I believe love conquers all, even hell. I believe we can come back to earth as another person after we die, but not as the traditional form of reincarnation. I believe we choose who we want to come back as. So where am I going when I die? I could tell you, but it's rather private, as well it should be. Also, I haven't given it a huge amount of thought, as I am too busy enjoying life to think about what happens after. I'm looking forward to finding out, at the same time I'm not looking forward to finding out. I guess I'll know when I get there.